Hey everybody, please check out this new thriller called Eight Remains on Amazon Prime, free to all Prime members. Hey, and welcome back to an exciting episode of Extras Features. Today we have two crazy people all the way from Australia that stayed up really late to be with us. We have CJ Barnes and Kat Cross. Thank you for coming. It's so awesome to have you here.
Pleasure to be on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I want to start right at the beginning. Let's start this off, Kat, because I wanted you here because I had questions just for you while I was watching the film. And you know what the first question is? Are you really a vegan?
Not in the slightest, no, not at all.
So what drew you to this part then? You're not a vegan and you're playing a vegan character.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the concept in itself of being a vegan and then wanting to eat human flesh, to me, first of all, I think I thought it was hilarious, first of all, and brilliant. And also not having any lines whatsoever and having to portray that struggle, I found really intriguing. This guy, his brain, it's an interesting place to hang out.
So, CJ, as a director, you had a lot of work to do here. I mean, nobody really speaks other than the newscaster just to lay us the land of what is going on.
Because we were telling the story from the perspective of the zombie as opposed to telling them the story from the perspective of a human, it just didn't lend itself to having much in the way of dialogue in there. Obviously, the main character, she can't communicate verbally, so she didn't have any lines. So it just didn't make much sense I think there's about three lines apart from the newscaster in the whole thing. And the newscaster was there sort of just to give the setup more than to actually, you know, be a contributor to the overall narrative. But, yeah, it just didn't I thought it worked a lot better without there being any real extensive dialogue.
Okay, so let's get into the actual film now. You start off with books on the nightstand. Now, I want to ask, who picked the books?
Sorry?
You have three books on the nightstand. You have Artemis, Fully Raw Diet, and Calm Study. Who picked them?
So actually my partner is she's a dietitian, so we actually have quite a few books around, and we have a few vegan friends as well, which is actually how the idea for the film came about, was that I went out with unless vegan restaurant with vegan friends, having dinner with them out is always a real painful experience. And so that was sort of where it generated. So we actually borrowed some props from our vegan friends who did actually work on the film as well. But the reason I included Artemis was a book that I had just finished reading. It features a female protagonist, and a good, strong female protagonist. And so I thought that sort of lent itself to, you know, as a subtle, I guess, Easter egg, for people who have read the book, they would know that, you know, and it sort of set the tone where we have this, you know, strong female lead, and then, you know, just kind of, yeah, just a little bit of an Easter egg there.
So did you steal the world
vegan poster? Sorry?
Oh, sorry. Did you steal the world vegan poster from them too?
No, actually, I printed that one out specifically for the film. Although I did actually give a couple of the vegan props that we had purchased for the film, I gave them to them as a gift. But yeah, the one we wanted to convey that the main character was vegan, that was the setup or the household was vegan, without trying to be too on the nose. You know, we didn't want to be like, here's a, you know, and I think it was probably pretty on the nose, but we tried to add those little elements into the background rather than
I think in comparison to real vegans, it wasn't so bad. Like, if you're a real vegan, you're literally shoving it in people's faces. So I think he did a really good job of doing it subtly, as in retrospect, as far as a vegan goes. I don't think it was too in anybody's face.
Okay, I will argue that point with you. It is in my face. You have these books on fully raw diet. You do a right-hand shot of World Vegan Day. What other than a hardcore vegan has a poster of Vegan Day on their wall? You said you're coming in there with a hot dog? Never in your life are you eating meat in front of that person.
The irony would be that the vegans that that I am personally friends with don't have stuff like that hanging out in their house. So I think your average vegan person, while they will, Kat's right, they will talk to you frequently about being a vegan, they don't have a lot of paraphernalia hanging out in their house that says, like, they don't have posters on their wall.
Not so much in their houses. I see it on cars, but
That was why we have the tattoo, because the most prominent thing is that vegans will get the bee tattoo, which is why we included that into, you know, as a feature of the character, was to have that vegan tattoo on the back. We tried it in a couple of places when we were going
on the wrist.
The wrist is a very common place that we see, and it just, we couldn't get the shots right and make them look natural. So we ended up just slapping it on the back of her neck, which apparently is also a place that vegans will tattoo that bee.
Really?
So, well, they'll tattoo it anywhere, really.
That's the truth. But I find with real life vegans, it has to be transportable, like not in the house. You're not going to invite meat eaters into your house. It's like gross. You don't want that. So they've got to stick it to themselves or put it on their car.
There you go.
I go into houses all the time.
They don't like it.
All right.
I mean, I also argue with a Buddha statue. Buddha is a symbol for vegetarians. You have a Buddha statue too. Uh-oh.
That actually is in my house. And if I'm in full disclosure, I have no idea where it came from. I think it might be my partner's. I don't know. No. I don't know where it came from. We just kind of left it there. It seemed, I don't know why I associate Buddhism with veganism. I mean, I suppose Buddhists are generally vegetarian, so I guess it kind of fits with the same theme.
Okay, you have an old school alarm clock, and I was thinking, where's her iPhone? Where's her Android phone? Why do we have an old school alarm clock? Is this supposed to take place in the 80s?
First of all, Chris is 100, and it was in his house. So that's where that came from. But if we're going into the story, I think I'm just going to make the story of my character. I'm just hopeless, a useless girl who can't charge a phone. That's probably why I was the first one to get bit, and my girlfriend survived. So I'm not reliable at all, so I just live in a house with somebody who sets me up with an alarm clock so that I get up for work every day.
I felt really guilty about using that because it's such a common, you know, starting point for a lot of films is to use the alarm clock. But I did have purpose behind it that was beyond just like, oh, here's the start of the day, in that when the alarm goes off, we see that the bed's made, there's nobody in the shower, but the alarm's going off, and the intent behind it was that somebody was supposed to wake up. Somebody had set the alarm. Somebody was supposed to wake up, but we sort of said it that whoever was there wasn't there to turn the alarm off. So something has happened. And then as we travel through the house on that first scene, we start to see that there's nothing there. But then some of the stuff we tried to do, I don't think sort of popped out on the film as much. I wanted to do a lot more sort of blood effects to give it more of the impression that something has happened there, but we filmed it inside my house, and my partner was like, no, you don't get to put blood on the walls. You don't get to put blood on the carpet. You don't get to do those things. So the carpet that's there, like the little rug, we bought that for the film so that we could pour blood on it and not upset anybody, and Yeah, unfortunately, I think some of those little details kind of got lost in the filming. But you know, we did our best with it, I guess.
So you do have one continuity error, and I'm sure you know what it is.
Which one?
You have the same photo in the bedroom and the living room. You've moved props. I totally noticed it. Called that out. First time watching my
first. I didn't notice that either, but I would say, actually, we probably didn't move props. We probably printed the same photo twice and stuck it in two different frames. Yeah. That's probably a far more likely scenario.
We had a photo shooting day, and it wasn't overly successful.
Yeah, it was quite a funny day. So as a setup, the girl who, you know, and that's another thing that sort of setting up in that first scene is those pictures of the couple. And the girl who we see later on in the running through the forest is the same girl. And so we did a bit of a photo shoot to kind of make it, you know, so we can see the two characters together prior, and it sort of sets us that interaction later on and makes it a little bit more meaningful. And I wasn't sure how much it actually had an effect, but when we went to a film festival in New York, and while we were showing there, we heard these ladies behind us, and they go, "Oh, damn, that's a girl! That's a girl from the pictures. That's a girl." And so I think it made more sense to people than I really anticipated to begin with.
Okay, Kat, there's a question just for you. How fast do you really run? Help.
Say that again.
How fast do you really run? Because you're running fast, unless he's speeding up the film. You are booting it.
All right. So, I just need to put this out there. You can't really tell by looking at them, but those shoes inside them, because I'm a very short human. What? So, for me to not look absolutely miniature compared to everybody else in the movie, I had these hidden heels inside my shoes. And then Chris comes up with this amazing idea for us to shoot in a forest, and the entire floor was covered in pine cones. Like, I don't know if you've ever tried to run on a pine cone, but it's not an ideal running surface, realistically. And then you want to go ahead and add some it wasn't great. So, to be fair, I wasn't running that fast. We sped it up.
And the clip that we used, or that particular take that we used, I think was one of the last ones that we did. So
it was after I rolled my ankle about.
Yeah, her
time.
And Jess had gone up and down the forest
a lot,
probably a dozen times, in order to get all the shots that we wanted. So we had a guy with a Steadicam who ran along. And at one point he actually he tripped on something and fell over, managed to hit himself on everything, but keep the camera safe.
He did a good job. There was one time that he went head on into a tree, but he managed to not smash the camera. I was quite impressed.
Yeah, it was good. And then we had a drone operator who did some of those, sort of wide angle shots. And so that took us a few times to get, so each time they were running. So by the time we get to the actual take that we used, both girls were completely winded.
And it was hot as shit.
It was very hot.
An Australian summer inland. Like, you don't want to be running not even one time.
Yeah.
So
they're both exhausted. They had already done a couple of the tackle shots as well. And the first couple tackle shots, they didn't really hold back on each other at all.
We're not professional actors. Let's just do this. Like, just hit me with it. Come on. Just go. I'm going to look the other way. I'm not even going to know what's going to happen. And I got absolutely nailed.
Shooting in the forest was, it took its toll on the actors, that's for sure.
I guess I have to ask you, Kat, have you ever tackled anybody before?
Well, can I say this? Is this going to be incriminating? No, I have. Yeah. So I grew up in Victoria. I don't know if you know a lot about Victorian Australian sports, But I grew up playing AFL, which is Australian
rules football.
Aussie rules footy. And there's a lot of tackling that goes on. And to do, I mean, get pregnant or you can, like, tackle people. So fair to say I don't have any kids. I know how to tackle.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Well, because that was a fabulous tackle. That's all I want to say. That was full-on amazing. So, good work.
Yeah, it wasn't at all acting. It's not like, oh, man, these guys are really good at acting like they're hurt. Like, that hurt. That wasn't it.
You should have seen their knees afterwards. Were both scuffed.
And my palms had, like, entire pine cones embedded in them. Not ideal.
How did the other actors feel after being killed, like tackled, like solid tackled?
Jess, the partner, they both complained a lot about being sore afterwards. And in the floor of the forest was all covered with pine needles as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it not only the occasional tree root and everything like that, but also pine needles too. And we did probably a dozen takes of everything to get it from every angle and So it built up a little bit.
It took a little bit of recovery, just a touch.
Yeah.
Some of the blood was real, let's just say that.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
Added to the realism.
Mm.
Okay. I do have questions like, how long did it take you to cut out the hole in the door?
Well, the hole in the door, we went at it. It's actually in the interior, so that kind of helped a little bit. But if anything else with filmmaking, you kind of think one thing's going to happen and then it doesn't happen. So we went at it first with a hammer, thinking we'd just be able to bash through it with a hammer. It turns out that's a lot harder than you think. It took, I think, the team about a half an hour, put the holes in it, and then hit it with a hammer so that it busted apart.
But it wasn't like just a drill to get through. Like, they were using, like, you know, the drill bit that you use to, like, cut out.
Yeah, to put for, like, a doorknob.
Yeah, there was some decent machinery going on to get that hole in the door.
Yeah, that was a bit, it didn't go as well as we thought at first.
So how did you get Dreamweaver's van in your picture? I know they sponsored you, but who works for them, or did you steal it?
No, didn't steal it. In my working life, I manage an audiovisual department at the hotel, and we utilize Dreamweaver's to do a lot of, like, mostly our draping for conferences and things like that. And so when I said, hey, we're doing this film, the reason we got the van in the first place is we needed something to block off the road that was behind it. So the road that we did that scene on is actually a private road. So there's no through traffic. Made it a really ideal scenario for us because, you know, then we don't have to worry about traffic. We didn't even have to really worry about permits in that case because it was a private road. We just had to get permission from the owners. The road that goes across there that's perpendicular is a main road. It's basically a highway. So we asked them if they would mind giving us a truck so that we can block off the road, and they said sure. And that was it.
So you don't think I pay attention to these
things? They were adding that to us. Huh?
I pay attention to all these details.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I thought, you know, here you go. It's an advertisement for you guys. They don't need it, but, you know, that was how I pitched it anyway.
Okay, so let's get to the underground parking.
Yeah, okay.
Did you guys run out of cars? There's like 3 cars in this place, if that.
It was actually a slow day. So we work at a hotel, and that was actually the hotel parking lot. The thing was is that we had absolutely no intention of filming in the car park in the first place. that scene was meant to be set outdoors. But on the day that we went to shoot the scene, the weather started to rain, and we're like, we can't really do that with drone shots. It's not going to work. We actually were intending to shoot outdoors, but on the day that we went to go and actually film the scene, it started to, the weather went really bad and it started to rain. So we thought, okay, where can we go? So, we working at the hotel, which is the car park that we used, it was very accessible to us. And there weren't, like you said, there weren't that many cars. But that was because the hotel was fairly empty at the time. So we went down there, and the irony being is that we have this entire plan to have it shot outdoors. And we were forced down into the car park, and then I think it actually turned out to be one of the best scenes in the entire film. And there's only about 5 scenes in the film, but the car park worked really a lot better than it would have been the outdoor shot to have gone. So I was pretty pleased that we kind of ended up getting pushed that way.
So, Kat, this is the scene where we discover your zombie's little issue. Did you hear that or no? Okay.
Sorry, one more time.
Yeah, this is the part when we find out your character has a little issue.
Yeah.
How does that feel? Because, I mean, you have a certain, I presume you've seen zombie movies. They have a certain thing they do, and you can't do it. How does that feel?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a completely unfamiliar feeling.
I'm interested to hear where this goes.
It was, for me, I really enjoyed this scene because this is where I sort of started to be able to kind of actually portray more of the character and get a little bit more in depth and become more than just the dead. And this is sort of where everything kind of starts to make a little bit more sense, and everything that had been set out in the beginning sort of starts to come together. Obviously, just before this, you had seen the scene with my girlfriend where I had the little flashback, and that sort of set...
After that.
Was it?
Yeah, what scene was after that?
Oh.
Car park scene, you were... It feel pukey.
Best in this.
Actresses, right?
Yeah, pickle things. So... I mean, I enjoyed this because give me the opportunity to sort of turn that character into, I guess, what Chris had created in the beginning when we first, and more interested in doing the film. I mean, I like him, but I don't like him enough to just do a movie without it being at least a little bit interesting. So this part for me was sort of, where I got to get into that a little bit. Do you have to pee?
I have to pee.
Yeah.
All right, I just get you. So now he's not here. I should ask questions about Chris.
Yeah, I am.
So why do you think Chris goes by CJ?
I think because of all the shady stuff he does behind, like, his girlfriend's back that he doesn't want her to know that.
That's fair enough.
I'm joking.
That's fair enough.
No, I'm kidding. I don't really know. I think he just wants to have that special persona, perhaps. Maybe I should get. What should mine be? Is Catcross boring? What can I be? KC. Nah, doesn't work. I don't work.
Is he back yet?
I actually have no idea why do you want to be CJ Barnes instead of Chris?
Because there's actually quite a few Chris Barnes out there.
Well, there you go.
Chris Barnes is the lead singer of, former lead singer of Cannibal Corpse, current lead singer of Six Feet Under,
oh,
which is a death metal grindcore metal band.
Do you Google yourself? Is that
not anymore. Chris Barnes is also a professional bowler, former world champion professional bowler.
Sounds like how he Googles himself.
Yeah. So there's lots of Chris Barnes. Christopher Daniel Barnes was the voice of Eric in The Little Mermaid.
No.
So I you know, you come across I toyed around with, it sounds silly toying around with names, but CJ is my first two initials, and Barnes is my last name, so I just thought that was a lot.
Okay, let's move along. Since you went to the bathroom, we started on that topic. Okay, you have my favorite line in the film is, what kind of sick person eats tofu? I broke up laughing.
You know, obviously we're trying to really reinforce the fact that the guy who's in the house, which is actually me, in full beard, you know, is not a vegan, but he's in a vegan household, so he broke into the wrong house. And then we cut that with the shot of Kat coming in the door and sort of, you know, she hasn't eaten anything, so she's feeling very weak, so she bangs against the wall and she very sick. And, you know, we thought that was kind of a good juxtaposition of what kind of sick person eats tofu. This is the sick person that eats tofu, but they can't eat tofu anymore. And they need to eat meat, but all that's there is tofu. And then, you know, then we get the conflict with the pumpkin and, you know, but
very emotional about it.
And I personally, so I think it's gross. I think it's basically is like wet styrofoam. So for me to think, what's that person eats tofu? I mean, you know, in my opinion, sick people do, but, you know, there you go. However, the tofu was actually, so that was shot in my own house, and that tofu was actually in our fridge because my partner is vegetarian. So, yeah, we have tofu in the house, but I don't eat it. Ever.
Okay. Do you think she's going to watch this and think that you think she's the sick person?
Oh, she already
like,
knows.
She
knows how I feel.
I don't want to throw a spanner in the
No, no, no. She knows how I feel about it.
Okay. You have music for the first time in the last part of the film. Where did that come from?
My brother, actually. My brother and his good mate in and one of my friends, actually, in Las Vegas. They did all the score and the music for the film. So the last, the final song at the end, that's his music. So it's all original score, all original music. And we actually just finished up another short film, and he and the other guy, Robin, they did the also we're kind of keeping it, I guess, in the family, as it were, with that, with the music sort of stuff. Plus, when you're going through the process of, you know, making films, especially short films, especially on very low budgets, if you can get somebody, you know, fortunately I have access to people who are quite talented, and, you know, it makes it a lot easier when you're having to put music in. You don't have to worry about copyright or anything like that. It's all just, you know, custom made for the film itself.
Okay. Before I go to fun questions, Kat, I have to give you one more question. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Are you in the next film, or did he cut you out?
I am in the next film.
Okay. See, I just wanted to start an argument.
Exactly. No, no, she's actually slated. So we just finished up another film that we did for Trop Fest called Lost Property, and Kat stars in that one as well. And then we are in the process of crowdfunding for a short film called Love Thy Neighbor, which we're hoping to film in April, and she'll actually be in that one as well. So I like to think of myself as a low-level Kevin Smith, where, you know, he started off with using all his friends, and then they constantly pop up again and again. So we have a lot of people that were participated in Hunger that my hope is, as we start doing more films that, you know, they may not have as much of a feature role, as they do in, say, a couple of the films, but you start to see them in the background and they start to become tropes of, you know, the films that we do. So people go, oh, yeah, I recognize her from the thing. So the guy who actually was starred opposite Cat in Lost Property is one of the zombies from the car park scene.
I will look for him. Okay.
So
are you prepared? I've given you plenty of opportunity. You've had 3 weeks since I've contacted you to get ready for these questions.
I'm ready for it. I just haven't told her what they are.
Oh.
I can give them different questions.
I'm always ready.
Okay. Favorite 2018 movie?
Favorite
2018 movie?
Ooh, favorite 2018 movie. Holy hell.
Shit.
I could actually piss you off a little bit because I saw Overlord and I really loved that. And I actually literally just finished listening to your guys' review on, I think you had, worst, or was it the Bad Times at the El Royale and a couple other films, and you reviewed Overlord briefly. I actually really liked Overlord myself. Probably not my favorite of 2018, though.
I am going to be this guy. I really, really liked Bohemian Rhapsody. To be fair, I don't have a lot to compare it to as far as 2018 movies go, but I'm on the spot of even seeing that one with Gaga. What is it?
Oh,
A Star is Born, because people keep comparing that to Bohemian Rhapsody, but as far as I'm concerned, they can suck it. It's Bohemian Rhapsody, and Gaga can just get the hell out of town.
I agree. I have no issues with that. Gaga.
This is kind of a struggling, I have a 3-year-old daughter, and so I don't actually go to the movies that often.
Paw Patrol?
Can I say Paw Patrol Mighty Wings before 2018?
That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about it.
What's your
many impressions for 2018?
Now, as you watch the episode.
I would easily be able to answer the film on 2018 that were the worst. That's pretty easy for me to say. The best, that's actually really, I saw Auckland before the end of the year, and while it had a lot of flaws to it, there were a lot of parts that I quite enjoyed. It was filmed here on the Gold Coast, so it was,
keeping a look.
Yeah, Simon doesn't like that answer. Shit, 2018 wasn't all that spectacular. A lot of the movies I was really excited for ended up being turds. Like I was just geared up for The Predator, and then I watched it and I was like, this is the most dog shit movie I've ever seen in my life. Except for I watched and you might appreciate this, I watched Death House, finally. That was the one that was the Expendables of horror.
I haven't seen it.
And it has, oh, I like, being a guy who reviews movies, I feel like you should, but I also.
Okay.
This movie, it's been in production hell for like 4 years, and it was supposed to be The Expendables of Horror with Robert Englund and Kane Hodder and, you know, all these guys from horror films, and it ended up just being. I can't even explain it. I've never been so depressed in my entire life. After having watched that film.
I may be in trouble with this next question. I'm going to go with it. Kat, guaranteed you're a native Australian. CJ, your accent isn't enough, so I'm not sure if you are. But I'm going to ask this question anyway. One myth about Australians that should be dispelled right now.
About Australia or Australia?
Oh, it should be Australia? Okay.
Australia?
Well, I mean, about Australia, like, traveling around, one of my absolute favorite things was to instill to anybody who was thinking about coming to Australia about all of the deadly creatures that we have here. And I mean, you don't cuddle koalas. They're not a cuddly creature. They are fucking adorable though. But I mean, don't touch them. They're scratchy. You don't want to touch that. But we have like this amazing myth about Drop Bears, which has come about via koalas, about these terrifying creatures with razor sharp fangs and claws that drop from the trees onto you.
They're like mutant koala bears.
Like, neck out. And I actually traveled in, like, 2012. I went over to LA, and I had people, I was at a party, and I literally had, like, this crowd of people around me asking about drop bears. And I was like, yeah, man, like, you've got to, I walk around with a helmet on at night. Like, you need to watch out for that. Like, people wear armor and stuff. Like,
first time I went to Australia, that was the first thing somebody said is watch out for drop bears.
Yeah, you got to watch out. And it's hilarious just watching people's faces because koalas, all they do is sleep. Like, they're very tired creatures. They may fall from a tree.
Yeah, but they're drunk.
They will not rip.
They're always drunk. Eating eucalyptus effectively works like cannabis on...
Yeah, they're kind of like the Australian sloth. Like, yeah. There's really not a lot to worry about with a koala.
What I say is... I saw something the other day that really makes sense, is that Australians are British Texans.
What?
Australians are sort of like the southerners of Britain.
We are nothing like British.
Yeah, it's so true, though. It's so true.
We don't even like British people. The southerners hate them.
One thing, I'd have trouble. You know what? I always heard great things about Australia, and having lived here. I'm from Portland, Oregon, originally. I've lived here for 8 years now.
See, I knew you were an Australian. Have no accent.
I find Australia an Australian. Nah, I know. I try. But ironically, when I go home, everybody says, why do you have an accent now? I'm like, I don't have an accent.
He's a half and half.
You have an accent.
Oh, I do.
But I can say is absolutely the truth is if you don't care about spiders, this is a bad place to be.
Yeah, do not come here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The spiders are as advertised.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen some photos.
Especially near, like, trees and bushland.
Yeah. And if there's long grass, you don't go walking long.
We're filming the forest scene in Hunger.
Yeah.
We actually encountered
a brown snake.
Delightful little brown snake. I don't know if you know too much about brown snakes, but basically the smaller they are, the more poisonous they are. And
venomous.
My bad. Venomous, sorry.
It's an important distinction.
Another word for poison. Anyway. And so this little guy, he was just a little snake, and one of the guys, I was like, oh my god, there's a snake. And he was like, no, it's just small, it's fine. It is not fine. That is the worst kind of that snake that you hunt. And so I was quite ready to just pack it in. I went and sat in my car in the AD.
You did that a lot, though.
I called that my trailer. I'm going to my trailer, Chris. I'm going to my trailer. And I just went and sat in the car until the snake went away because there was no way in hell that
you
I was
go in the
going
water and
to
swim away.
A, run in 32 degree heat, B, roll my ankle on friggin' pine cones, and C, get bit by the most venomous snake in Australia.
It's not the most venomous snake in Australia. It's not the most venomous.
Sorry, not the most, but...
But they are pretty venomous.
What do they give you, like, 40 minutes to live after you get bit?
No, it's bollocks.
It's about 40 minutes. Delightful.
I just changed my last question just because you guys were amusing me.
Are you writing down?
No.
Okay.
Stay away from Australia.
Yeah.
Favorite theme park ride?
Scuba Coaster.
Oh. Do I have to do Australian theme park?
No, I don't care.
Yeah.
Probably... Honestly, I'd have to say the Mickey Coaster from California Adventure.
You were like, at the Scooby Coaster, and you're... Oh, shit. Scooby Coaster's amazing.
It's a mouse ride that has an elevator. Whoop-de-doo. The Mickey Coaster at California Adventure is full-on, and it's one of those fast starts.
I've been on it.
Huh?
So lame.
It is a mouse ride.
Have you ever... Do you know what the Scooby Coaster is?
No.
It's a mouse ride.
Chill out.
And it's not a dream world. It's a movie world.
Okay, well, it's a movie world. I'm sorry. This guy, professional with the theme park.
Yeah, I used to work at movie world.
There's this roller coaster, and it plays like a rock and roll kind of punk rock version of the Scooby song, which is amazing, first of all. And also, it's inside, relax.
Scooby's awesome.
It's inside, it's inside, and there's like laser lights everywhere, and you, it's dark, and you don't know, and all of a sudden you go back. Amazing. I don't know, what's the matter with you?
It's a mousetrap.
It's like magical. It's really
whiplash. Ugh, it's horrible.
I would go there right now.
Okay, Chris.
You're a mouse ride.
This is the last question. I have one question just for you. This is it, and this is for your daughter. So when you play this back for her in 20 years, she'll remember. What is your favorite episode of Paw Patrol?
Oh dear, that's a tough one. It is a tough one. I actually really like the one that where Rubble falls asleep and he dreams that the dinosaurs that they go on an excavation and he dreams that the dinosaurs are real. That one I actually quite liked. It's funny, like I can go on and on about Paw Patrol. When you're a parent, you sit and watch these shows over and over again. And the thing is, you start to really question a lot of things about them. like how Adventure Bay relies on a 10-year-old boy and a bunch of talking puppies for all of their emergency services. And it's not even like real emergencies. It's like, oh, my boot's stuck in a fence. It's not something I can solve myself. But I have my theory. I'll leave you with this. My theory is now that Paw Patrol is actually Ryder, the little boy, is actually an Elseworlds Bruce Wayne, who instead of seeing a bat, saw a puppy at one point, and then created effectively a Justice League of puppies, rather than a Justice League of Zack Snyder-esque, really way too dark for their own good superheroes. And that's my theory. That's actually Bruce Wayne, but just with puppies instead of bats.
So before you go, tell everybody. Before you go, tell everybody where they can find your film.
What?
Your film. Where can we watch it?
At this stage, it's not publicly available. We're still in the running for a few film festivals. We actually are showing this weekend, although I'm sure this will be published later on, but this weekend at the Portland, the PDX Stream Underground Film Festival. And then we have two showings, one in the UK in Somerset and one in Oklahoma, actually, at the Crash Landed Film Festival as well. So, yeah, we've got Kat actually is up for Best Actress in a Short Film at PDX Stream this weekend. So we're kind of got our fingers crossed that that will happen for her. Yeah, so we actually have a few showings. Put it up for public viewing about June this year.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time.
That's when we're finally on the coast.
Thank you for time. You guys were awesome.
Thank you very much, Simon. Appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.